Hello, everyone. Good morning, good day, good evening from wherever you're joining us. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Andile Madonsela, and I am still your host. And I'd like to welcome you to the fifth and final episode of the AEN podcast. But don't worry, that is just for season one. So season two is coming up, and it will be an interesting one. Today, I have an interesting episode where we will be focusing on networks within the evidence-informed decision-making sort of space. And we would still love to hear from you. So please make sure that you continue to engage with us on all our social media platforms using the hashtag AEN podcast. But without wasting more time, I'd like to welcome today's guest, who is the AEN director and co-chair of the Africa Evidence Network. Hello.
Hello, Adile.
How are you?
I'm good. And you?
Good, good. So some quick bio points for Siziwe. Siziwe Ngwabe is a social worker that really loves to be part of something bigger than herself. But also she loves running, but absolutely hates waking up in the morning. Another interesting fact about her is that she's a rural farm girl and absolutely hates city life, don't we all? Okay, so let us get into our icebreaker questions. Are you ready for my
Yes, let's go.
So the first one is, would you rather drive an ice cream truck to work or work dressed as a clown? So are you driving an ice cream truck with the sound to work, or are you dressing as a clown at work?
Actually, we had that sound yesterday and my kids were saying, we don't like that sound, mommy. I'm like, I will drive that truck and go all over, but you can't touch the ice cream.
Okay, so you'd rather drive the truck.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, and then the second one is, tell us about your first job and what you sort of learned from it.
Gosh, my first job, I worked for AngloGold Ashanti, okay, where I was doing my practicals. What I learned there was it is really hard for mine workers and their wives that stays in rural villages and they are working in mines. So you find that it's so difficult for them to, you know, build relationships.
Yeah.
And you'll find maybe someone, the woman had given birth and just comes to the mine to look for the husband with that newborn baby because the husband is not sending enough resources. So what I've learned is difficult to manage long-distance relationship either way, whether it's in the mining community or wherever that is. Mm. It was really challenging and it brought a lot of, you know, social issues for women in rural villages and the social issues for them staying in the mining community.
And how many years ago was this?
Gosh, 1997, my first job.
Okay, my third question is, what looks easy, like a lemon squeezy, but from a distance, you think, that's easy. But when you're close, you realize, this is difficult. Like, this is not easy at all. What is something in your life that you've realized, this is actually quite hard, but from a distance, you thought, very easy?
Oh, raising teenagers.
Oh.
I thought this was going to be easy peasy.
Mm-hmm.
These people are finding themselves. They are going to be able to do things by themselves. Let me tell you, that is not true.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy. It's difficult because they're going through different phases of their life. During that puberty period, it's just so chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was the easy stage of raising children. Oh boy, I was wrong.
I can't imagine. And then the fourth question is, what do you miss about crèche? So crèche is kindergarten for some of you might not know crèche. What do you miss when you think about that time when you were in crèche?
Those songs, those rhymes. I had one yesterday as well. I was like, even if you don't even know what it means,
yeah.
You don't even know the words,
yeah,
but the rhymes, shouting at the top of your voice. I'm having so much fun, I think, being carefree,
yeah,
not knowing anything.
Not having bills.
Just no bills, no anything. You're just having a time of your life.
I get that. Okay, last question, right? What is something new that you've learned about yourself in the past 3 months? You know that we are ever evolving as humans. We're learning new things about ourselves even all the time. What is something new that you've learned about yourself like in the past 3 months?
I thought I was very, very patient person. And I've realized, no, I was just winging it. I have no idea of what that looks like, but I think my patience has been tested in the recent times. So, that's what I've learned about myself. It's something I think to work on as well, because there are many things that still are about to come. So you need to learn to be a bit more patient.
Get that. Okay, thank you so much for being a good sport. Those were my icebreaker questions. Did they break the ice?
Yes. Like
all right, let's get right straight into it, right? So I feel like you're the best person to talk about this topic with, because as the director of the Africa Evidence Network, a network of over 5,000 individuals from all over the continent that have come together to come up with creative ways to sort of advocate for evidence-informed decision-making in their spaces.
Mm.
Let's start where it all starts, or where it all started for you specifically. How did you find the world of evidence-informed decision-making? Because, like I said, like I always say, no one grows up and says, when I grow up, I want to be in EIDM. You were clearly a social worker. You're clearly on another path. So how did you find evidence-informed decision-making?
2017, I think in the beginning of the year, I was thinking a lot about, you know, the work that I was doing was really big, taking care of orphan and vulnerable children in the continent. What if I had known sort of evidence around OVC initiatives? Maybe I could have contributed better in that role as a technical advisor. So there was that thing playing in my mind at that time. And then I chatted to a friend of mine, Janine Mitchell.
Okay.
And she's like, Ruth is looking for someone to help her with the network. I'm like, what is the network?
Yeah.
Like, I don't have much, but I'll connect you to this person. And then we had a discussion with Ruth, and I was like, this is what I was thinking about, but I did not know what it was called. So I'm like, no, I'm really interested to learn in the space and maybe grow in the space to sort of understand the other ways of solving the challenges, even like bigger challenges in the continent. And they were solving poverty, which is the biggest, you know, a diverse and difficult challenge to solve for the continent. So that's how I met Evidence, stumbled upon it in 2017.
okay. And what is EIDM? For someone who's never heard the term evidence-informed decision-making, I think this is sort of a standing question I'm asking all the guests. What is it? What are we even talking about?
Right. I think EIDM, for me, like layman terms, is just using the available evidence to make decisions.
Sure.
So whether is through different methodologies that people have done in that particular topic, look at what is the best thing that you can use to make a difference in the space that you are in. So for me, that's basically what it is. Use what is the best evidence that is available that can make you make a difference in terms of maybe you want to contribute to policy development, you want to contribute to program design. So what is there around you? Look around you. What is there that is available that can help you? That is evidence that says this works. This does not work. This might work. So look at what is there to help you sort of do your best in running your program or to develop your policy.
Sure, sure. And now that we've sort of covered how you came into the space and what EIDM is, now let's bring in the network sort of discussion. Mm-hmm. So what are networks in the context of EIDM, and sort of why are they essential? Why should we have them?
Mm.
Let's shut down the EN. Why not?
I think having networks is very important
because
that's the ground where people have an opportunity to foster connections and collaborations amongst each other. Right?
Sure.
People that might have not known each other, that they work in the same space, the network will like bring you together with that particular person. And also, it's also a space where people can share capacities amongst each other. There are people that are way further in EIDM that have better experience than others. So those that are experienced, they have an opportunity within the network to share their learnings, share their experiences, and see how we better improve together as a collective. Because a network is about being a collective. That's why our slogan says, together only EIDM can become a reality.
Yes.
That's how we do that. And also advocate. You cannot advocate as an individual.
Yeah.
Advocacy is for a community.
Sure.
So we advocate for EIDM to make sure that people use this and are aware of this sector, this growing and amazing sector, to make sure that we work together. And also, I think as the network, it's also important to be member-driven.
Sure.
If you're part of something, you must feel that this thing speaks to you.
Yeah.
So it gives you an opportunity to contribute. It's a two-way sort of relationship. So I think that's why networks are important in this. And also they have that powerful opportunity to bring people together.
Exactly.
So with our evidence series events, webinars, we bring people that might not have seen each other or met. You know, it's really an amazing opportunity to be part of a network. So I think it's really key in the EIDM space, because that's the only place where people can be brought together. They're made to see, oh, we're going towards the same direction.
Sure.
So how do we hold each other and succeed together?
Sure, sure. You've described it very nicely. Connections, collaborations, capacities. Mm. I'm sure there's some problems there with bringing people together. What are some of the barriers that you found with having a network, and sort of how have you planned or addressed them previously?
Well, having a network in the continent language has been our biggest barrier.
I know all about that.
And I know Adilesa should learn French to help us in this process. So I think because there's not only English that is spoken in the continent, there's in the Francophone community, people are part of the network. So most of the time, programs or activities that we do are mostly in English. But I think we have taken a stance within the network to make sure that we begin to translate some of the work in French so that we accommodate our French speakers. And then later we'll build it up to other sort of languages just to make sure that it is inclusive in language-wise as well. So that is one of our biggest challenges. It always sort of niggles around most times. And then I think the other challenge would be, you know, financial resources.
Yeah.
When you say to someone, please fund me to bring people together, that's a lot of funds, Sizwe. So what is in for me?
Yeah.
Right? So you need to be able to be in a position to find what is it that will benefit the ecosystem in the work that we are doing. So financial resources are not easy to find, but I think over time, people have seen the value of networks in the continent. So that is getting better a little bit. But there still can be more that could be done in this space. And then thirdly, engaging young and emerging leaders. We've been flying by ourselves, these elderly people. So we had experienced individuals within the network, and the young and emerging leaders consistently said, what about us? You know, we don't see ourselves in this, but I think we had them. And last year we launched the Africa Evidence Youth League, and I'm sure they can see themselves in that space. They can see the vibrance in their space, and also they can learn with their peers from their peers as well. So I think those are the top three that I wanted to share today, that always I was like, these need to be resolved somehow.
we are glad that you've been quite proactive in addressing this. And then since I'm the coordinator of the Africa Evidence Youth League, if you were to advise me on some of the best practices or the key principles on establishing and sustaining, because the EN has been around for quite a while, clearly you guys know what you're doing, what would you advise? What are some of those key things that you should sort of keep in mind as you establish or try to sustain a network?
I always say to people, nothing about the AEN members without them.
I love that.
Nothing about the youth league without the youth.
Sure.
Otherwise, you'll drive a bus that is empty.
Sure.
They need to drive the bus with you as their coordinator to get to the destination safely. Otherwise, you won't get there. And then secondly, co-creation. We need to co-create.
Yeah.
What the network stands for.
Sure.
For example, with the network, the strategy of the AEN was co-created with the members. So we got to where we are because of the involvement of the members, because we can't do it without them.
Yeah.
And also create those opportunities for the members to be able to share their work. Within the AEN, those platforms that we create, host a webinar, write a blog, write a story of change so that people have that platform to share, because there are not many of these platforms where people can see their work being published. They can be able to say, oh, I have an output somewhere. And then secondly, I think we learned from our members to say, we can't engage 5,000 members at a go.
Yeah.
What is the best way to do? And members were like, drop us in smaller groups.
Sure.
So that we can see how this is going to work. And then in 2020, we started with working groups for different work streams to build the work, like in fostering connections, evidence capacities, and sort of arts and science. And those started then. And then they grew to become communities of practice now, so which is another way to engage members. A person will say, I'm interested in this topic. Can I be part of a community of practice, or can I start a community of practice?
Mm.
Which is something that is really great with the AEN. Ideas are shared by the members, and we see how best we help them realize that.
Mm.
And then I think also members from different countries, some of them, like lately we had a lady from Ghana that said, I'm new in the ecosystem. Can you connect me with experienced individuals in Ghana that are doing EIDM?
Nice.
And we connected them. So as the AEN will consistently check, how is it going? Can we do something? Are there bottlenecks in that space you're trying to build an ecosystem in Ghana? So, but if there was no network, where will you find things like that?
Mm.
So I think it's something that is really helpful, because we need to enable members to do that. And also we need to learn together.
Yeah.
We always need to reflect as the AEN team, membership, and reflect and improve. Because things won't stay the same.
Yep.
This sector is moving as fast as, I don't know, maybe the cow train, but we need to always reflect, learn from this and improve. Otherwise, we will not make a difference if we're not doing those things. And I think also having a great team.
Mm.
Though it takes a long time to get to having a great team, but sometimes you work as hard as you can to get there. Because people that work in the EIDM, people that have skills in the EIDM, are far in between. So you need to find your person, and you have a great team to help you hold this network together, grow the network, and make it what it needs to be within the ecosystem.
Ah, thank you for that. And sort of, where do you see the future? Now let's look far. Where do you see the future of EIDM, particularly where are some of the opportunities where sort of networks come in as far as the future of EIDM is concerned?
The future is young and bright.
Exactly.
I think the future is young and bright.
Mm-hmm.
I think young people don't fear.
Mm-hmm.
Innovation is part of their DNA.
Exactly.
So if we nurture them, they'll be able to come up with innovative ways that we've never thought of.
Mm.
So let's nurture our young people in the space and make sure that we, you know, we get to the right place where we have a new generation of young EIDM leaders in the space. And I think also we need to invest in innovations like this, the storytelling approach. I think like listening to the voices of the citizens.
Yeah.
Because everything that we do is for the citizens.
Yeah.
So that local voice, using those storytelling approaches to make sure that there's a two-way relationship. We gather data from the citizens, but we need to come back to share that data. What are the best approaches to share this data to them in ways that they understand why this researcher was here and now they're coming back? Is our lives going to change, or we just want that information from them? I think that's something really key and important. And thirdly, I think we need to believe in African solutions and approaches.
Sure.
Poverty we're talking about is in the continent, and solutions are within here.
Mm.
Nowhere else these solutions will come from. They'll come from the continent.
Exactly.
So we need to trust each other and trust people's approaches in terms of how they want to address poverty, because that's where we'll find those solutions. And also, fourthly, I think we need to invest in resources, not necessarily financial resources.
Okay.
Yes, financial resources, capacity development resources, all the like resources as a whole, to make sure that this sector continues to grow and continues to innovate and continues to work towards eradicating poverty, mm-hmm. because that's the only way we'll be able to do it, if we continue to invest in those important things and invest in capacity development as well and production of quality work.
Yeah.
Because that's really important. We can't just be, you know, producing and producing. It has to be quality work. Definitely. It has to be good enough for us to use it and make a difference.
And how would you like to be remembered, just as closing marks, if we reflect on your life 50 years from now, you're no longer there maybe, or you've retired, sitting somewhere, how would you like to be remembered? What is that one impactful thing that you want us to remember?
I always say my life is a life of service and sacrifice. It has to make prints that will be seen or contribute to this generation and the generation yet unborn. So that's all I strive for, to make sure that I make a difference worthy for the generation yet unborn.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful way to close off the episode. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for coming to share your knowledge with us. We are looking forward to seeing what the AAN will do next and the future and how the young people will come in there.
Thank you very much. I think it's really always a great opportunity to share what the AAN does, mm-hmm. and how it has found its spot within the ecosystem to contribute as best as it can.
Thank you so much. And to you, our listener, thank you so much for tuning in yet to another episode. We look forward to hearing your comments and your questions regarding networks within the EADM sector. Until we meet again, bye.